Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to Full of Hot and Cold Air. No, I'm not Brendan Heckler. I'm not Mary Beth Heckler. I'm not even Sarah Zook. I'm Anthony Priori, and I'm the editor and producer of Full of Hot and Cold Air. I'm also the digital marketing specialist here at Comfort Supply. You've heard quite a lot of voices over the past season, and you may be wondering why you're hearing mine right now. Well, we've got a treat for you today. This is our Best of Season 1 special, and we'll be turning back the clock and recapping the highlights of our very first season, as well as replaying some of my favorite moments from the year. So, here we go. Welcome, everyone, to the Full of Hot and Cold Air Best of Season 1 special. This is a really exciting opportunity for me because I finally get to step in front of the mic after several episodes of editing and producing behind the scenes. So the way this podcast is going to work is I'm going to sort of recap some of the memorable highlights from our Season 1, which includes looking back at a few episodes and just seeing generally how far we've come. So as some of you may know, the podcast was originally designed as an HVAC and small business podcast. CSI PGH is at the cutting edge of sort of taking advantage of the market and unique opportunities, and they saw a hole in the market where they could reach contractors and dealers through podcasts and sort of spread their message. So CSI PGH was trying to be unique and provide insight into how businesses were run, and particularly theirs, and also industry trends and patterns. So there was a lot at play, a lot of unique experiences and considerations that were taking place with this podcast, and it extrapolated into a 15-episode season one, with a season two coming soon. Spoiler alert. We'll get back to that a little bit later, though, but they also had the creation of Coal Blast, which was a spinoff where sort of tech talk and techniques were added in a shorter, more abbreviated episode. So the actual Full of Hot and Cold Air itself could grow as a podcast with more innovation and trend-setting discussion. So why don't we get started by listening back to episode one, the introduction. You can already sort of tell the husband and wife banter playing off each other really well between Mary Beth and Brendan in that first episode. They set off the, what I'm going to call, iconic introduction, Full of Hot and Cold Air, where they traded that back and forth. It was very playful and fun right from the beginning. So it's fun to take a look back and see the discussions and the intentions that they were having from back then and where they are now. So let's take a listen.
What we thought we would start the very first episode of our brand new HVAC and small business podcast, Full of Hot
and Cold
Air, and we just wanted to talk about what we're going to be bringing to you guys and why we're doing this a little bit. So, Mary Beth, what do we have in store for the handful of people that are probably out there listening right now?
Well, let's backtrack. Let's start with why in the heck are we doing this?
Okay.
So last year we had this really great idea that we were going to do this video series. Brendan and I are both, I guess what you would categorize as millennials. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think demographically that is the segment that we fall into.
I think it's actually Gen X.
Gen
or
X.
No, Gen Y.
We're 30-somethings. We'll just say, we'll leave it at that. We're 30-somethings. So we're of the generation of content. So video, social media, all of that. And I think we kind of noticed this big shift in the industry that things are getting a lot less, I don't want to say dry, but we're moving away from the era of manuals and printed handouts and moving more into an interactive type medium. So we had this really great idea that we were going to start this video initiative. And it was kind of a lofty goal of mine last year. And it turns out that I am not very good at editing videos, and it was taking just way too long to get anything done. And, you know, on top of everything else I was trying to do work-wise and being pregnant, it just, these videos kept falling lower and lower and lower on the list. So then when it came time to do our end-of-year review, we sat down, and it was kind of like this big elephant in the room, like, hey, so we had that initiative, we were going to do all these videos, and it never actually happened. And yeah, my bad. So we decided, okay, we still want to be able to produce all of this really good content. What is an easier way to do that that does not involve, you know, 50 hours of editing? And right. Brendan had this brainchild of like, hey, let's do a podcast.
Are you giving me credit for the podcast?
I am giving you credit.
Awesome. I like that.
And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. I love podcasts, so that means I'm going to be awesome at it.
You're doing great so far.
Doing okay so far.
Well, I'll say they were doing okay so far. Obviously, the podcast took off from there. So next, we're going to sort of transition to my top five moments from the season. These will be from five separate episodes ranging from the entirety of the season. And I wanted to start with episode 4, Innovation, because I thought that it was a really great parallel between what the podcast was trying to do and what Comfort Supply as an organization was trying to do. Obviously, it was touched on briefly in the conversation that John Vanderveer, who would be the guest on the show, and Mary Beth and Brendan were having, but also just innovation as a whole in general in the broad sense. And it was just, it was a really interesting, what I think was foreshadowing for what was to come with the podcast, but also what's to come for Comfort Supply as a company. So as you'll listen in this segment, there's the discussion was sort of defining innovation. And at the time of this podcast recording, John Vanderveer and Mary Beth and Brendan had recently attended an innovation workshop. So that sort of sparked some of the discussion they were having. So let's take a listen.
One definition I've seen that I like is kind of, Brendan, what you said about design. Mm-hmm. It's just creating something new. So innovation is really about creating something new, and whether that's, Mary Beth, how you're saying, of finding what's out there and integrating it and making a new thing, or whether it's that kind of invention, that disruptive innovation. That's all innovation. So there's different levels of things that really matter when you're talking about innovation. And you know, what I found to really treasure about it and about the process is kind of alignment and buy-in. You know, I think you can have all the ideas in the world, but if you don't have a process, a framework, and especially if you're in a corporation or a company and the top level leadership doesn't buy in, you're not going to innovate.
I think I've worked in a lot of industries as well where the reverse of that is true, where top-level management says, okay, this is what we're doing, but then there's not buy-in from everybody else. So I think I would agree with that. Having buy-in from all parties that are stakeholders, we'll say, is imperative, because mm-hmm. otherwise you have people that are going two different directions and you kind of get stuck where you are.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So how, let's switch gears and make this maybe a little bit more focused. Innovation in terms of a business setting, how would you incorporate that? How is that valuable to, like, say, a contractor who has a shop with maybe 10 employees? Or how is it, put it in layman's terms, how is it something that everybody can use, as opposed to sort of being like this lofty thing mm-hmm. that, you know, only really cool techie you know, Silicon Valley type companies use? How is this applicable to everybody?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, starting with the higher up level, like Fortune 100 companies, mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact statistic, but if you look at who's been on the Fortune 100, the Fortune 50, even 500 for the last 100 years, there's only a couple people that consistently stay there. So I think what I'm trying to get at is there's kind of a cyclical nature of everything. You know, if you're not really keeping an eye on what's next, what's happening, you're going to get left behind. And there's companies, you know, I think like P&G or some of those big ones that have done a really good job about staying innovative and keeping that mindset. And they've been able to buck the trend and actually stay on those lists for quite a long time. So I think, you know, you can kind of use that as a model and bring it to any size business where, you know, you don't have to necessarily spend half your budget on it or anything like that. But if you're looking at what's next, what's the industry doing? What are people doing? You know, how are their needs changing? You're gonna stay innovative. And as long as you can communicate that with your company and encourage kind of wild ideas and develop them and give a little budget to that, I mean, I think you're going to be in a lot better place than your competitors.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's kind of what brought you to us and spun our idea kind of, you know, something that hearing your definition of companies being innovative, it, you know, I think it made you think of us because that's something that we pride ourselves on doing a lot day to day. And, mm-hmm. you know, as we talked and prepped for our workshop, it, you know, I think you might have said at one point, like, well, you guys are already pretty innovative, and we had never defined it like that. Mm-hmm. We never really thought of it in those terms. Yeah. So
I think I always go back to that quote from your grandfather who, for those of you tuning in, who founded the company back in the 80s, what was his famous quote? Don't tell me this is the way we're doing it.
Because we've always done it.
Because we've always done it this way. Basically, yeah, don't get stuck in that rut of, oh, well, that's just how things are. It's constantly looking for new ways to improve. So I think in the spirit of him, he would be very excited about this mm-hmm. innovation workshop that we did.
Really great discussion there that you just heard. And the discussion with all guests was fantastic throughout the season. There was really great, great banter. And just it seemed natural and flowing, especially for a group of people who really were not experienced in recording podcasts. So moving on to episode number 7, Company Culture. I thought this was a really great episode to pick because anyone who's familiar with Comfort Supply knows that the mission statement is taken extremely seriously and the core values are taken really seriously, and that's imprinted into everything that's done on a daily basis. So this podcast in particular was the first ever phone interview. Matt Bedard, CEO of SG Taurus, was the guest, and it was interesting listening to a group of people who are very familiar with small family-owned businesses discuss the significance of company culture and core values and how it reflects through your employees, through your customers, and just setting trends and positive outlooks on how the day-to-day operations function. So let's take a look back and listen to Matt Bedard, Mary Beth, and Brendan discuss company culture.
So diving a little bit more into culture, ironically, as I was scrolling through Facebook last night before going to sleep, as I think most people are wont to do, out of habit, scrolling is the new smoking, as they say. So I'm scrolling on my phone, and I just happened to see something. It was a Simon Sinek post, and he said that culture equals values multiplied by behavior. And it really stuck out at me, A, because I knew we were having this podcast where we were going to be talking about culture, and I thought that's a really good way to boil it down into three words, culture equals value times behavior. And I thought that it was a pretty inclusive definition. So I'm curious to know what your personal definition of company culture is.
That's a pretty solid one. I won't steal it from him, obviously. I will say that in my simplest view, culture is just the Taurus way of doing things.
I like it.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And that's what we try to invoke in our organization as far as building culture. And it gets deeper than that because we've done a lot of work on establishing core values and make sure we drive the culture through those core values.
So what are some of your core values?
Well, we have 5 of them. Mm-hmm. It's respect, or whatever it takes, attitude, attention to detail, continuous state of self-improvement, and a sense of urgency.
That's very similar to ours. Brendan, you wanna spit out a few of ours?
Yeah, I'm gonna cheat. CSI is family, achieve the impossible. We sense of urgency as well over here. Whatever it takes as well. Trust our gut, humble yet confident. And Matt, I gotta ask, how long ago did you have those? Was that something that the founders of the company instilled those core values, or was that a process for you guys along the way, or how did those come to be?
So I'd say about 3 or 4 years ago, I can't remember exactly the time, I felt that we really needed to wrap our hands around core values. And coming from a corporate environment, the last thing we wanted to do is determine core values that were literally like on a poster, on a wall, and it was just words, and you could just forget about them. Mm-hmm. So not sure if you either of you are familiar with a book called Mastering the Rockefeller Habits.
No, I haven't read it.
Okay, so take a look if you get a chance. But he talks about an exercise called the Mission to Mars, which is if you had an opportunity to display your business to someone from Mars who doesn't understand English, doesn't understand anything about our culture, and you could pick an employee or two to have them just watch, which employees would you choose and why? And so what we did was Stephen, Taurus, myself, and some of the other leadership team got together, and I walked them through this process where we simply wanted to think about the best and brightest of our company. And the reason we wanted to talk about that was that's why people do business with us, right? Just like no different than Comfort Supply. It's because of the people. So we said, okay, let's each think of a person that really is the reason why people do business with us. And let's think about the characteristics of that person. And we literally did it blindly. And each person in the room had a different employee to highlight. But then we zeroed in and said, okay, what specific characteristic does that employee bring to the table? Why is it the customers choose business to do business with us as opposed to all of the other options they have out there? Why do they choose us? And out of that discussion, these core values were born, so to speak.
A really interesting discussion that they were having was about core values. And one of CSIPGH's core values is best technical solutions, which I think is a really strong transition to my next favorite highlight coming from episode 10, which is contractor marketing. Now, this was the first episode that I got to sit in and listen to record as the editor and producer. I was hired in June, which was when this episode was recorded. And it was just a really cool experience to sit down on one of my very first days and actually take hold of the podcast. And so I guess I'm a little biased in saying this, but this was one of my favorite episodes because they were talking about subject matter that I was really, really familiar and passionate about. As a digital marketer here and having that be my background, it was fascinating to hear the topics discussed a lot. So Jeff Vandergriff of 2D Mechanical was the guest star, and he was and is the full marketing department for 2D Mechanical. So it was cool listening to him discuss what that was like and hearing Mary Breth and Brendan, who really prioritize marketing and digital marketing, sort of have a feedback back and forth with him about marketing, especially in an industry with HVAC where it's not really highly talked about. So let's take back and take a listen.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is still relativity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you make sure that you're staying relevant, you're staying top of mind? There's a lot of noise in the marketplace, sure. In our marketplace, in every marketplace. The market is oversaturated. Our consumers are overstimulated, and they don't, half the time, they don't know how to make sense of mm-hmm. what it is that they're seeing, unless you find a unique way to really engage their interest and sort of pique their interest so that you stay top of mind. I mean, in today's marketplace, you know, 15 years ago, we as sellers of goods had all the power because mm-hmm. the consumers didn't know any better.
Right.
But now everything that they need, information is so readily available and just at their fingertips at all times. It's, they know what they want to buy and who they want to buy from before they ever engage with us, before they ever call, before they ever look us up online. And it's super critical for us to try to stay relevant in that type of space, and mm-hmm. and it's very difficult, but we found ourselves to be pretty successful at it just because of the way we've differentiated ourselves sure. in the marketplace.
Yeah, that's one thing we hear a lot of guys, I'm sure you hear your sales guys coming back. I mean, sometimes they walk in the door and they can't even open their book, they can't even get their sales pitch out of the way. It's like, I want this.
Yeah.
I want this. Tell me how much it's going to cost. And I've got another guy coming in an hour to yeah. give me the price yeah. on the
and
same
at the
thing.
Same time, they want transparency, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They don't want a laundry list of options. They're like, give me three options and I'll pick one.
Right.
But if you overwhelm them with data, it can be dangerous mm-hmm. and have a negative effect on, you know, what you're trying to do. So trying to remain top of mind is always sort of our main focus.
Yeah.
It is sort of funny to think about. I don't deal a lot with sales, but it is funny just to think about, like, from a sales perspective, how much things have changed because consumers are so educated now. Like, I just keep thinking of, like, you know, the used car salesman of back in the day. Like, you yeah. could really BS somebody on anything and make it look good. And you've lost that ability now because even, right. yeah, if you're buying a used yep. car, you're like, well, you know, I looked up the VIN number and Kelley Blue Book says this, this, and that. And they're yeah. like, oh, crap.
They're okay. like, I don't want to be sold to. I just want to have a conversation because I already know what I'm going to buy. I yeah. just want to see if I trust you to buy it from you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
The sales has almost just become like an intermediary. Like, yep. just make this exchange happen. And that's all yeah, I care about.
No doubt.
Okay, so next we come to an episode that I think was extremely significant, not only for the purposes of our podcast, but for social inequality as a whole. This was an episode that had sort of been planned and discussed for a little while, and it finally came to fruition in episode 12. It was the Women of HVAC. And Brendan was not a part of this episode. Sarah Zook took over in his role and co-hosted with Mary Beth, and they were joined by Crystal from the office and Anna Tarecki of Mitsubishi. And they had a really fascinating discussion about being women in an industry that is stereotypically dominated by men, which was fascinating. And now this clip is obviously a little longer. It's going to be a little longer, but I think that's extremely important because of the discussion that they were having, because it is so much bigger than the podcast itself. So let's hear back to the ladies have some fascinating discussion about that.
I think there's kind of a fear for women entering the industry. It's okay, it's really male dominated. I don't know anything about it. But for both of you, you just jumped in and you said, okay, I'm willing to learn. So do you think that maybe women are a little bit hesitant to enter the industry? And what would be your advice for that?
I would say just if you're a hard worker and you come in day to day and really show that you're here for a reason and you learn as you go. And I mean, I think men or women, they'll pick up on that. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as you come in with that attitude, then I think people will, or men, I guess, will earn your respect. And I think that gender kind of goes away after a bit, maybe initially, you know, they look at you, but once you start to prove yourself, and I mean, everybody comes in that they need to learn, but once you prove yourself and show them that you know what you're doing, and if you don't, you find the answers and you get the job done, then you earn that respect.
Yep. I would agree. I think that it's a learning opportunity. And I think that's how I looked at it when I first started was, wow, this is good. I don't really know anything about HVAC and I'm going to learn. So mm-hmm. I always kind of enjoy different learning opportunities. I would say it was a little bit of a shell shock, not for me because I had been in sales roles all this time, but more so for the customers. Because I sold all to men. I mean, and most of the people around me were men. One person actually said to me, "Oh, wow, it's a girl," because they just weren't, weren't ready for me to walk through the door. And it was interesting. I still talk to him to this day. But I agree with you, Crystal. I think eventually that part goes away. And I think if you embrace the opportunity to learn new things, this industry can be very loyal to you. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit later about the opportunities that exist in HVAC and how many jobs need to be filled and how few people are there to fill them. I think that there's a lot of opportunities for women in this industry, and you just need to kind of go into these interviews with an open mind and understand that, you know, distributors are looking for somebody or contractors are looking for people to sell product mm-hmm. and market it as well as do many other jobs. So I think that, just an open mind and the willingness to learn.
Yeah. So you guys both brought up a good point about kind of needing to prove yourself, quote unquote. And I know that one problem that women and particularly minority women face in the business world is just this need that you need to prove yourself even just to get to the starting line. You know, what's been your experience? Have you ever felt, not even necessarily in this industry, but just in work in general, that maybe you've had to give it a little bit more or just pay extra attention being a female in business? I mean, or, you know, do you think it's kind of just an unconscious bias? I mean, I certainly don't think that men sit around and they're like, oh my God, a woman coming, she can't possibly know what she's talking about. But it's just that unconscious bias that you see so much homogeny within the industry. And then when someone breaks that mold, you're like, oh, wow. Okay.
I would agree. I think that for any women, whether it be minority women or women just in general, I think that, you know, you have to have a certain level of confidence. And I think you do have to prove yourself. But I think anybody new in this industry has to prove themselves. If you're new in a sales role, if you're new in a marketing role, if you're new in a support role, you have to be able to say, I don't know the answer. I don't want to give you the wrong answer. So give me some time, but I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that follow through that's going to make or break you as an individual. The problem is, right, as you said, the barrier is the interviewing process, right? Mm-hmm. Will they take me seriously? Will they consider me? What do I need to do in this interview that's going to get me that job? And I think the biggest piece is confidence. You know, confidence in your ability to learn, confidence in your ability to, whether you're doing marketing or support or what have you, confidence in those abilities, and the HVAC portion will come. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's probably it. Yeah.
So on my side of things, just going off of that, I completely agree with you as far as like the confidence, because I came to Comfort Supply fresh out of college, and when I came in, I didn't try to pretend like I knew anything because I knew nothing. I remember when I applied for the job, I called my dad, and my dad was like, "Do you even know what we have at our house? Like, what kind of air conditioning we have?" And I was like, "I have literally no clue." And of course, now here I am, like, wherever I travel or wherever I go, I'm like, what do they have here? You know, I'm always checking it out, literally all the time.
We all do it.
We do. Right, exactly. What do you have in your basement? And you go to a party and you're downstairs. What is that?
Exactly. That's exactly the case. So I didn't try to be anything that I wasn't, or, you know, lie about what I knew. I just was myself, and I feel like I had the confidence, and I was more selling myself, you know?
I agree.
I almost think that today it's more of a generation thing. Mm-hmm. When I first started here, I remember Sandy in the office saying that sometimes guys would call or come up to the counter, and if she would answer or try to help them at the counter, they would literally say, "I want to talk to a man." And I, being here, I've never had that come up, mm-hmm. but I think over the years, I mean, again, like I said, I think it's a generation thing that the older, maybe the men feel that way, whereas now we've come so far, and it's almost to the point where it's not abnormal to see a female, like, even when you're driving on the road, construction site, I swear I see more, at least one woman now mm-hmm. on a construction site or holding the road signs, or I think you see that more now than ever. So I think we're almost getting to where it's not abnormal to see a woman in a male dominated industry.
It's really cool hearing them talk about breaking stereotypes in the HVAC field and for women in general. I thought that episode was definitely one of my favorites to sit apart of and edit, because it was so tough to edit, because it was hard to take things out because everything they were saying was so relevant and so practical and so important. So I think that episode actually ran longer than some of our other ones because it was just everything I felt was so crucial, and it was hard to make cuts. Another really important episode, which was our season finale, episode 15, which was very secretive for a while. We couldn't really talk about it. It was Uber and VRF. Sort of look behind the curtain. This episode was hard to edit and produce because there was a lot of different things that we couldn't say. We had to wait for timing on when we could release certain aspects of it. Basically, I feel like this was a milestone moment for CSIPGH because of working with Uber. It was actually pretty special for me too, because I got to attend the filming of the case study that Justin Kern, one of the guests on the show, would be recorded on. And it was just fascinating to hear the process in which Mitsubishi Comfort Supply and Uber had to work together to heat and cool this building where they test drive self-driving cars. So it made perfect sense to be our season finale. You'll hear audio clips from Justin and from Tom Greco of Mitsubishi in this recording. And it was really cool to see a 2-year project come to a head like this. And we were really excited when we produced it because it was just sort of an accumulation of everything that we'd been working on over that time. So let's take a listen back to our season finale, Uber and VRF, with Mary Beth, Brendan, Justin, and Tom.
Okay, so because of the unique nature of this particular business that they set up shop here, they're testing these cars. I imagine that puts some really unique constraints on the engineer in terms of designing a building that was well ventilated, that housed a lot of different, shall we say, micro environments within the structure. So what kind of constraints did that put on everybody in terms of climate control and ventilation? Was this a standard project? Was this really unique? Like, how was this different?
It was unique. It was unique in the sense that they basically took over a giant warehouse, giant depot building. They didn't want to build brand new. They wanted to reuse. Mm-hmm. That's their kind of corporate policy, is to reuse. And in doing that, they actually had a giant warehouse, per se, and they built a whole second floor inside of it. And then in doing that, they also have a garage built into it as well, and a machine shop. And then it houses, you know, hundreds of engineers, and it's all basically the same space. Okay. You know, so there is design constraints there that are pretty big. I mean, the one thing that that Uber wanted to do was have an open floor plan with exposed ceilings. Mm-hmm. So in doing that, the equipment's exposed, ductwork, you know, everything is exposed. Right. So it has to be quiet, has to fit within the constraints of the ceiling heights as well. So building that second floor did shrink some of the ceiling heights, which is a challenge when you're trying to run large ductwork, you know, things like that. If you're running larger ductwork, then you're going to have noise problems as well.
That was some great stuff from Justin. Now let's hear Tom reflect on the design constraints from his perspective.
Uber's Advanced Technology Center in Pittsburgh presented some unique challenges. The designers and the building owners wanted a seamless integration between the VRF equipment, which was the HVAC cooling and heating system, as well as the control system that was put on top of it, which allowed them to seamlessly monitor and control the systems that were in the building. City Multi controls are very capable out of the box, but a building that's unique like this and the challenges that it presented being very open and sprawling require just another level of being able to control and monitor not only the VRF system, but the third-party equipment that was required here. Things like dedicated outdoor air, advanced ventilation strategies for the garages and the R&D center, and then having a single point of access and control for the owners to be able to efficiently monitor and control everything without ever actually having to be at the job site.
All right, well, those were my top five moments from the season. You could tell we had a little bit of everything from social commentary to incredibly significant projects that we worked on to our company culture to how this podcast is just innovative as a whole. We covered an extremely wide range of topics in 15 episodes, and there was a lot of fascinating things and awesome things that didn't make the cut, and this was hard to decide not only what episodes I was going to include, but what segments of each episode I was going to include, because there was so much value and so much awesome conversation throughout. But it's not going to stop there, because season 2 will be coming very soon. It'll be returning over the summer when Mary Beth returns from maternity leave. So we're going to be getting some things ready, getting some talking points and some things worked out. But we have an awesome season 2 lined up. I can tell you that right away. But don't let that stop you from suggesting things that you'd like to hear. We're always open to listening to what topics or things you find relevant. So if you have any suggestions, please let us know. You can get in touch with us on social media at FOHAPod on Twitter and Facebook. We encourage that you like and follow those as well to stay up to date. You can listen back to all of season 1 and all of our Cold Blast episodes in their entirety with links that have been posted on those sites. But with that said, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll keep listening and anxiously await season 2. We'll have some news coming on that soon. So until next time, thanks for listening.